Welcome,
Matt Howie.
Welcome,
Jessamine.
Welcome to the Metafilter Podcast.
Welcome to episode 73 of the Metafilter Podcast. It is October 1st, and we are recording all our favorite bits from the previous month of September, and we'll try to do this at least monthly from here on out.
We've got it on our calendar.
We're excited. Yep. We're aspiring. We're stuff. I kind of shut the whole
early
pack
on the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, I've been having a weird sleep. We've had contractors doing energy efficiency stuff on the house, and it's just been a vaguely disruptive sort of thing. And
blowing in insulation.
Yeah, yeah. So that's all done. So the house is a lot quieter than it used to be. And
sweet.
Should maintain temperature better. But like now we're in autumn where like the temperature's kind of closer to perfect already. So it's like, yay, now the temperature's not changing much from what I want it to be anyway. You know, we should have done this like in June so that like in July we would have been like, fuck yeah, not dying of heat stroke.
How long have you owned that house? It'll be nice in the winter though, right?
Yeah, it will be. We've had it for about just going on 4 years now. So
nice. Nice. You get like tax credits from the state for that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's cool. A bunch of good energy efficiency stuff. So,
yeah. What prompted you to try that or do it or whatever?
You know, it's actually my folks had some done, and they were mentioning the specific incentives. There was like a bonus incentive if you started this process before like the beginning of September for my region of town, and so jumped on that because that was like an extra like $1,000 credit from the state,
Jesus.
Which is like, yeah, so. So we got on it, and we decided to go ahead and do it. And, you know, we've got an old 1910 house. It's really, you know, there was no insulation, you know, that sort of thing. It had a bunch of stuff that we wanted to get done, so.
Did I ever tell you the story of my San Francisco apartment? There are two things. We went to, me and my wife went to Australia the time we shut down Metafilter, the only time.
Right. No, you left me in charge.
Yeah, but it was shut down, and there was a big page of a bunch of links. This is 2000.
Oh, that was when
the 2 weeks
was
off
charge.
That one August or whatever.
Yeah, it was in 2000. We come back, and we're like, as soon as we got back from the airport, we had a relaxing time in Australia for a couple weeks. We come back, and we're like, God, there's a window open. I just hear traffic like they're driving down the hallway. And we check the windows and stuff, and we're like, nope. That's just the 1916 windows. And then later on, like a couple weeks later, we saw the blinds and the drapes like moving from the wind that was coming through the cracks. Like
totally.
On a windy day, it was just the tiny cracks were enough to blow the drapes around. It was
well, San Francisco's got a lot of places that just don't even have heat in them in the first place.
Oh, yeah. We had like electric wall heaters. They were terrible. Oh, God. Remember Metafilter?
Hey, I actually got my landlady to turn my heat on 2 weeks early because it was 40 degrees outside.
Oh, well, Jesus.
Yes. Every year she's like, you know, I don't turn the furnace on until October 1st. And I'm like, you know, it's against the law to keep my apartment at 59 degrees just because you're cheap. And we all have a decent time with the whole
That's
thing.
That's like the state motto, right? Wear a sweater.
Put on another sweater, I think, is the motto.
Yeah. All right. So I guess let's do projects maybe first.
Let's do it.
Sure.
Or
Metafilter was
any...
great this month. I mean, it's always kind of great, but like I found a bunch of stuff that I liked.
What were your favorites?
Well, Josh, Matt, here's your favorite that you didn't mention for some reason. But Miss Kaz has created a Tiny Fix bike gang, a bike gang run by female fixie cyclists under 5'2", who are working to make Chicago's bike scene more inclusive and, more importantly, way more fun. I met her at South by Southwest this past year, and she is terrific, and it's a terrific, adorable website with a bunch of sort of girl-oriented bikey stuff in cool ways. So it's nice, and I'm sure it's your favorite, even though you forgot to mention it.
I don't even remember approving this. This is crazy. Did I approve it? Like, I've never seen this.
Matt, you do I don't approve the projects.
Sometimes.
Are you taking that, whatever that sleeping pill is, where you get up and
sleep? Are you ambient approving stuff?
I was sleep approving. Oh man,
approving
it. Isn't
fugue
it great?
State.
But am I right? It's nice,
yeah.
though, right?
Yeah, it's cool.
I'm
it's
so happy
cool.
that Juliet Banana is so happy that she showed up in a project's post.
I like to make her happy. Yeah, exactly.
She's one of those people who, like, you know, you actually like. There, people get happy about things, but she seems like joyful. She's like one of the most joyful seeming Mephites I've actually, you know, ever met in person. So, I can I can read those all caps with all the actual glee intended by them.
Hmm. I like two things. This Fat Nest is actually a dumb little hack that's fucking amazing.
I did not see this. Tell me what this is and what it does.
All it is this thing that, like...
I did see this. I forgot that's what it was called.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird name, but I guess it makes sense for bird jokes or something. But yeah, you set up an account linking to some Twitter account, which is good for, like, I guess I could have set it up for the Metafilter Twitter account. And then we get a secret URL that's this crazy hash that nobody could guess. And then it's just basically a posting form, and it lets any of us post, you know, as Metafilter if we wanted to.
So if you're the Vermont Library Association and you want to give 6 people tweeting privileges, this means you can do that without giving them all the password.
That's right. Like, yeah. Okay. And I run like a password manager, and I have, I think, access to like 8 different Twitter accounts. And this is like, this is 2-button access. I click sign out and I click auto log in and I pick one of my accounts. But that's still a pain in the butt, you know.
Well, and that's one to many. What we're looking is many to one, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. I'm saying I share some of those. 2 or 3 of those are just based on events or like bike teams. It's a pain in the butt to, you know, it's a pain in the butt for me to, if I just had a bookmark for like post to blank Twitter stream, that would be awesome.
Right. 2 clicks, too difficult. 1 click, awesome.
And exactly. it's so simple and stupid. I can't believe someone didn't come up with this 3 years ago, at least. It's so simple.
Way to go, cell phone.
Yep. It's neat. It's a cool hack. I liked the random MST3K-O-Matic project. I think this ended up on the blue, too. Yeah, it looks like the Welp
posted it.
But yeah, this is from Scott Jackson X, and it does exactly what it should, which is just feed you up a random episode on YouTube of MST3K, and they've got it broken down taxonomically so you can get a random episode of a specific sort, like one that has Joel versus Mike hosting or other characters showing up in it.
Because people are particular. I have learned that.
Yeah, well, it's a very... There's some seriously... schismatic stuff going on with MST3K fandom and Joel and Mike and all that. So yeah, it's awesome. It's simple. There's a ton of the stuff was already on YouTube. So organizing like this is just kind of brilliant. So yeah, I thought that was awesome.
If we had to go around really quick, is it Mike or Joel? I'm a Joel man.
I've come to like both in different ways.
I couldn't pick either one out of a lineup.
I was a Joel guy for a long time, but I sort of warmed up to Mike's specific style. I feel like there was a little bit more polish and flow later on with Mike, but Joel was such the essential sort of core weird, this is actually a thing I am doing right now, sort of soul of the show originally, that it's hard not to lean towards him.
I like have followed stand-up my whole life, so I knew Joel from stand-up world in the 80s, and then so I loved him on the show, and then it was like, who is this carpetbagger stealing... It took me years before I could even watch a Mike show, but they're pretty good.
Oh, God, there was some thread, this was, I don't know, a couple months ago or something, people were talking about politics, and someone mentioned that Joel Hodgson posted some, like, shitty, racist thing, and everyone was like, oh, my God, no, and I was like, oh, my God, no, and then it turns out that, no, that was actually just some guy on Facebook whose name happens to be Joel Hodgson.
Oh, God, thank God.
But yeah,
stuff can ruin a career.
It was serious panic mode there. I don't think it went any farther than about 20 comments in a Metafilter thread where we were all freaking out. But yeah.
Speaking of which, Matt, why did you send me this picture of this racist peanut butter and jelly sandwich earlier?
Oh, while we were trying to hook up, I just thought it was hilarious. It's pointless.
It's like that old joke, you know, the peanut butter and jelly guy tells a priest, I'm telling everybody, because the Jewish guy in the confession telling the priest that he slept with a couple of like 20-year-old twins.
I don't
this joke
this
no
joke.
Okay, so
is this a real joke?
This is a real joke. No, this is a classic sort of dumb sort of
is
dirty
it racist
joke. No, no. Depending on how you tell it, it could be a little bit. But the way I learned it was this: this man goes to the confessional and he says to the priest, "Father, I have to tell you, I'm a 78-year-old man. I just had sex with these two girls, 20-year-olds. I don't know them from Adam. I'm not married to them. We don't have a relationship. I just had wild sex with them." And the father and the priest is like, "Well, okay. I can see why that's problematic. I can give you some penance." And the guy's like, "Penance? What are you talking about?" And he's like, "Well, this is a confession booth." He's like, "Yeah, but I'm Jewish." And he's like, "Then why are you here? Why are you telling me this?" He's like, "I'm telling every—" Yeah. So I kind of blew it by telling the punchline first, but yeah. That's a joke that though. I like. Yeah.
That's pretty good. I thought that was going nowhere, but that was good.
You know, I sometimes feel like, do you guys remember the joke, like, when we were little kids, which was about, like, you go to a stand-up comedy bar, and everybody's been there forever, and so all they do is they trade numbers are basically punchlines to all the jokes that everybody already knows. Yeah. And then there's this one guy laughing like hell, and the guy's like, "What's his deal? Oh, he may not have ever heard that before." I think that's what Twitter is like, but I can't explain it in 140 characters, so I've never told anybody.
See, I always thought of that joke. I heard that as a joke about mathematicians. So they're like at a conference, and so a guy's doing a little bit of, like, you know, conference warm-up icebreaking, and so he's just saying numbers, and then everybody laughs, and he says another number, like 187, and everybody busts up, and a new guy is like, "Yeah," he's like, "What is going on?" Talking to some professor he started with, like, I have no idea what's going on. He's like, "Oh, well, we figured out that it was much more efficient to just, you know, index the jokes than to tell the whole thing, since everybody's familiar with them anyway." And so the guy said, the new guy's like, "Oh yeah, 283 and people just sort of look at him, and it's like, "Hey, it's really in the delivery, you know."
That's pretty good. Well, that actually leads into my next favorite project.
All right, another filter.
About numbers. I don't know how to pronounce his name.
Mike Keska Park? I don't know.
Mike Science Park?
Oh, that could be.
I don't know. At any rate, I was in a CD swap with him, and I got, like, the best music CD of all time, and he's just one of these people who knows sounds, music, whatever, and so he's done this little audio survey of these radio stations that are just shortwave broadcasting precise time and frequency.
And oh, it is.
As you know, my dad was like a time nerd back in the day, and so every time I see this stuff coming up, I'm always like, "Oh, cool! Oh, cool! Oh, cool!"
Neat. Wow, it is the NIST, the National Institute for Standards and Measurements and stuff. That's
time.
Cool.
T stands for time, Matt.
Yeah. They are insane. That's cool.
Yeah, and it was just, I don't know, it was a neat little project that the guy did, and it's this this sort of audio thing. I've listened to little parts of it, but it's a cool kind of SoundCloud thing, and I just thought it was neat.
Sweet.
This feels like one of those things that, it's like another bit of pop culture that's just going to go away, the way there was, like, TV shows and movies might reference someone calling the number to find out what time it is. Not usually, even as far as I can remember, to actually find the time, but to pretend they're calling someone on the phone. I remember an episode of Full House where the oldest daughter was totally trying to pretend not to be completely lost at school with not having anywhere to sit at lunch. And so she was in the phone booth and listening to that and pretending to talk. And you could hear that at the time, at the beep, the time will be. And that's who does that anymore? Has that gone away entirely to the point where kids are not going to know what the fuck that is about? Like, you know, now or 10 years from now? I mean, can you even use that as a thing in a TV show anymore?
No, I think you call movie phone instead, right?
But that makes me think of Kramer.
My TiVo recorded the Ben Stiller show 20 full years old now, and does not hold up very well, even though everyone on it is amazing.
You know who doesn't hold up very well? Ben. Oh, wait, I'm confusing him with Ben Stein. Forget it. Go on.
No. There was a big joke about they're making fun of, like, Rescue 911 shows or whatever, as Rescue 411, and I was like, I have not dialed 411 in about 8 years, maybe, because the internet, because internet.
Because, like, internet, right.
I don't know if I ever remotely would. I can't imagine a time where I won't have a pocket computer that I could look something up faster.
I used Google Voice for a long time instead of doing lookup stuff, but then it went away once they had enough of our talking data. I would use 411 if it existed and were free, but I think part of it was it ceased becoming always free.
I just get frustrated and would rather, like, you know, oh, you're not using the right Google terms. Like, there's this cool one I just approved moments ago, so you guys probably have never seen it. Someone made this user TMCW, who makes a billion projects, lots of little programming projects, made this basically a native Mac menu bar app that monitors what you're listening to.
And what it's, you have listened to.
Yeah, and it's like Last.fm, but with its own API. You don't have to send your data to Last.fm because Last.fm
That's what I do currently, and that, doesn't work that
well. It's problematic. And I used to have, like, currently playing music on my blog in the mid-2000s. Thought
oh,
it was cool.
We all did.
If you scroll down, the graphics are insane, what he's doing with, like, crazy jQuery stuff. Like, all sorts of wacky visualizations. They're beautiful.
Neat.
Of, like,
wow.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Song duration histograms. I mean, once you get the data, you can do anything you want with it, and there's all sorts of crazy graphing, you know, ways of displaying that. And I just thought this was fucking amazing for this goofy little free software thing.
It's lovely. That's super cool.
Yeah. Pretty much everything great about a project.
Speaking of visualizations, I don't know why I'm so working on my segues this week, but... this was the 19th century data visualizations back when the Census Bureau published the statistical atlas, and then they didn't publish it anymore. And there were some scans up, but they were kind of difficult to deal with. And then Soma LKZX created this wonderful project called Handsome Atlas, or maybe Handsome Atlas is his, her. Yeah, Handsome Atlas is the larger thing, and it does data viz with a whole bunch of really cool ancient stuff. And then it was posted to Metafilter by Carson, and people got to sort of ooh and ah over it. It's beautiful. It's so beautiful.
Even
this visualization will make you feel like you are hallucinating.
It's like... it's like a directory to blog posts to actual documents, and every step of the way is really cool looking. Like, when even the document viewer is beautiful.
Yeah, the whole thing. I mean, it's amazing. He, this guy does the Brooklyn Brainery stuff just in general. So there's a lot of cool, funky, interesting stuff going on. But
yeah, this has to be some sort of toolkit, like PDF viewer or something. Like, it's really cool.
I do not know, but it is very...
I did not click enough times to get all the way down. This is
I can't actually look at anything on the internet and talk to you guys at the same time because I need more RAM.
Because Vermont.
Because RAM, yeah.
Wow. Distribution of trees in the U.S. in 1870 as a map. That's beautiful.
I know. It's amazing. It's just, like, wonderful stuff to look at and click around in.
Proportions of idiots
job.
And the insane.
Wait, shut up.
Well, no.
Pass that link along.
Well, just that, you know, it's the tradition of... Oh,
pass
man, just,
the link.
I killed
it.
Hold on. I'm an aggressive tab closer.
That's good. That's
fuck.
Healthy.
Where is it? Where'd it go? Oh, no.
You can go under history, recently closed tabs.
It says empty. What the fuck, Firefox? What is here? No.
You
anyways.
Must have private browsing turned
no,
on.
No. I was looking at recent tags instead of recent tabs. Here we go. Okay. It was the pie chart link. It's got... In the project's post. Here we go.
Yeah.
Aggregate number of insane, idiots, deaf, mutes, and blind.
Wow, idiots.
Well, you know, like 150 years ago was more of a categorical term.
Term that meant something specific.
Yeah.
What is that? What did it used to mean? Just
I think it was just a classification of level of intelligence. Like,
IQ within a certain range.
Wow, we've completely, like, defanged that word to be pretty much nothing now.
It's just what you call
Homer
Simpson.
And it's what people always bring up when they say, so, all these other words are going to be defanged if we just use them more and more and more, and then everybody fights.
Yeah, the euphemism trade mill versus and mass reclamation and
taking it back. Well, is that all the projects?
I had one other that I liked, which was...
I hope it's the one I had. It's not!
Ha-ha!
Cool. Suck what it. Is this?
This is a blog that Griffiths... Did we establish it's Griffiths?
I think we did.
I think that's what he said.
Griffiths.
I think that's what he said. I prefer Griffiths, too. Learn. But I guess it's his name. You know, whatever.
It's not his name. He's got an even crazier name.
Well, it's his handle, whatever. Anyway, it's a blog collecting just contents of 90s video game magazines. So it's like, you know, that's a whole thing. But it's fantastic because is there anything so aggressively dated, at, you know, 20 years later as the content of video game magazine copy and advertising? And there's some videos and stuff in there too, so it's just pretty awesome. And that's another post that got turned into a post by the Welk. Apparently the way it works is someone posts something on projects, then the Welk makes a Metafilter post about it, but then I miss the Metafilter post but talk about the project anyway. So that's the new system, FYI.
That works okay.
Was there too much money in video games in 1992? Like, these are a lot of bad ideas that people put a lot of work into.
The early 90s especially was a real big boom time. Well, it's been kind of a big boom since the late 80s. You know, there was the big crash in the early 80s when Atari sort of shat the bed. And before Nintendo broke out with the NES. But after that, there's been a lot of money. And I think to some extent at the time, there was a lot of money and not a lot of hardware to work with. You know, the 90s was a pretty rough period for ambition.
There was all about constraints, not ideas, right?
Yeah, I mean, things that looked more awesome than a NES weren't hard to make, but it was still hard to make things that looked as awesome as what's kind of routinely doable today on modern hardware and with modern software libraries, so... So you had shit like Phantasmagoria that was like a full motion video driven point and click adventure that was terrible, but at the same time, full motion video, man. You know, it's
The CDI and stuff like that.
Yep.
Great.
Oh wow.
The only other thing I wanted to mention was the Game of Thrones cake. This was a newish user, Malicia Flores.
You forgot something.
What?
You forgot to segue into it. You know, speaking of winter is coming.
I couldn't think of any way to get from video games to Game of Thrones. I guess they share a word.
Speaking of games,
a moderator always leads his posts, or no, that doesn't work.
I'm going to kill you for using singular they. Non-generic he pronoun. I'm a lady. This person is also a lady. And if you look at her video, which is in French, but it's got English subtitles, she tells you how to make a Game of Thrones cake. It's pretty cool, actually. Watched it.
Iron chair thingy?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
What do they call that thing again? I never read it, so I always forget.
It's like the throne. It's got some name, but that's where the king sits.
The Iron Throne, I believe.
The Mad King... put it together.
Although I'm worried because like the iron price is something from the wet people, so maybe I don't know. Anyway,
cake, chocolate. Wow, that's a lot of chocolate.
Yeah, it looked delicious, also, which is never hurts. But I just thought it was nice. We don't get, we get lots and lots of programmy stuff and less and less cooking type of stuff, and I enjoyed that one particularly.
Chocolate fondant. Oh my god, cookie. And it's got the little recipe at the end, all in grams. Awesome.
I had to buy a scale that did grams so that I could learn to make some of the stuff from the internet, because otherwise I was just totally lost.
Well, you know, all the, like, Ruhlmann and Alton Brown say, like, that's so much more accurate than the goofy American way we do things.
Oh, we finally bought
it. Yeah, totally.
We just got a scale that'll do both.
I did,
just a couple months ago, and it's nice, yeah.
Did you buy it for other reasons?
Did I tell
because
you guys?
My dealer keeps ripping me off.
With the contracting stuff that we had going on, one of the first things they said when they were looking at walking through our like unused attic space that could be a future bathroom, maybe sometime if we feel like doing the work, they're walking in and say, "Oh yeah," and we're like, "Yeah, we don't know what the space is for." They're like, "Oh, it was a grow room." Yeah. Floor is kind of wobbly because of moisture. You got this big fan, but it's totally unfinished. And
what?
You got power and water. Yeah, you had to grow up here. It's like, okay.
Super, super popular use of attics.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
You had kind of a Hesher house, right? I mean, you bought it from...
We bought it from like apparently just like a very nice. I would guess the girl op belonged to like the people before them. They were just some like random nice couple with a young kid. Not that you know young couples with young kids don't you know grow or smoke weed, but you know I don't get the feeling like the guy before them was this old cantankerous dude who works at the bike shop as a volunteer up the road sometimes, and he fits it a little.
If you know what I mean, bike shop.
What kind of dumbass puts their grow room in the attic? Where like, have they ever seen a Law and Order? Like all the imaging, you know, is from above with helicopters, and they try and find like, you know, grow room. You got that massive basement that could be totally hidden below ground.
They've got to be warm, and they've got to get light on certain levels, and there are reasons attics instead of basements.
Oh, I guess it's hotter, so everything's going to go faster.
Yeah.
Anyway, what were we talking?
I think we're done with projects, right?
I think so. That was great. Projects were great this month, as usual.
Way to make stuff, people. Way to be awesome.
And now I guess Metafilter, eh?
Metafilter.
Favorite Metafilter posts.
Here's the one that I like the most because I don't have that many for Metafilter. Most of my stuff is in Ask Metafilter. But I don't know if it counts as like kind of a friend's link to talk about your friend's post to Metafilter.
Well, it's happening now.
But if Josh can talk about his own stuff,
that's not technically a friend's link. You can't prove that I like myself.
This is my friend Sharon, and it's just a doofy little story about a cat that showed up at an elementary school in, I believe, California, and would just hang out there and come to school, and he became the school's cat, and his name was Room 8. And this is just, you know, little articles that talked about the cat, and there's pictures of the kids with the cat, and he lived to be a million years old, and nobody knew where he went in the summertime. And I don't know. It was sort of a combination of like cat story, funny things that happened in the 50s and 60s, and then other people linked to other things.
21. Holy shit. That's an old cat.
I know, right?
Here's the funny thing. A photo of the cat from 1964 looks like any cat today. There's no fashion. There's nothing to date a cat. I was like, that looks like a modern cat. Oh, wait a minute. Cats are just fucking cats.
And evolution is slow.
Yeah.
Well, and there aren't trendy breeds of cats the same way. You know, if you see a Labradoodle, you know you're not looking at a dog from 20 years ago.
Right, yeah. Or those goddamn corgis.
Corgis did still exist 20 years ago.
Not in my world.
Anyway, I enjoyed this post. It was fun. Got tons of favorites, and I read all the links, so it was my top.
Well done. I totally missed that. I think I'll go back for that because that seems
God,
nice.
The Super Mario canon. I saw this around the web somewhere.
Yeah, I found this amusing. It's sort of lightweight, but at the same time, it was like this post about an attempt to determine a correct chronology for all of the Super Mario games. Well, and more specifically,
explain. Okay. I don't understand this at all.
Okay, it's an attempt. Here's the thing:
the order they came out in isn't the order they.
And part of the problem is, well, there's a couple of problems. One of them is that there is no official date stamping of when the video game occurred, partly because like early on I don't think they were even thinking about it at all, and these days I don't think they think about it a whole lot. But you know, you've got Super Mario going to the Mushroom Kingdom or other places and dealing with Bowser and saving Princess Peach a bunch of times, but beyond that, and there's no clear chronology other than there's some games where Mario and Luigi are babies, so those must have happened earlier, right?
But beyond that, there's not they're related or they're friends?
Mario
or are
Luigi?
They dating?
Mario and Luigi?
Punch-Out?
I don't know.
Mario and Luigi, they're the Mario brothers.
Okay.
Oh, wait.
Luigi's the one in
Punch-Out? Why does Punch-Out
So here's the thing. Mario's been in a bunch of games that aren't Super Mario Brothers games. For example, he was the ref in Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. He refed tennis on the original tennis. He was, as you may recall, once Dr. Mario.
Is he the guy from Donkey Kong?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He was known as Jumpman back then.
Donkey Kong 3 comes before Donkey Kong because Donkey Kong is smaller?
So this is an attempt to sort of like take what can be gleaned, and there's competing timelines for these various things that people put together. There's a question of, like, when does Dr. Mario happen? Because for it to have happened, Mario needs to be a doctor, which means he needed doctoral training. But the argument that at least one of the chronologies made was that he got his medical degree early on, but only later actually took up a practice. So Dr. Mario actually happened much later.
He was busy plumbing.
And Quill, you know, too, has thing. This completely amazing comment in that thread, right? Talking about how that all comes together. What a fun thread this is.
Oh, my God. I never saw this.
I like that he put a bunch of effort into it, but I got there sooner, so I got more favorite. But and I like, I mean, I am ashamed that. But
you don't have your favorites turned off?
Huh? No. I don't pay much attention to them, but I was looking just now because I was like, oh, hey, I got a few favorites. That
you know what? The time, Mario timelines need platforms next to them because, like, there's so many gazillion, like, reboots of it for the Wii. I don't even understand what comes before.
Yeah, it's kind of tricky. But, I feel like it's something you do because you have a little all time on your hands, basically. It's a hard one to get behind. Well, and the Zelda games are similarly sort of weird, but the Zelda games are a little less prolific because Link doesn't show up elsewhere so much, and you know there's fewer games altogether. But that's the same sort of thing. It's like, how do you discern the timeline from games that seem to treat it more as, you know, retelling a myth than telling chapters in a story? You know, it's anyway. I thought that was kind of funny. I like it when Mephite's nerd about this stuff. So
it's cool. Very cool.
My recent favorite was this ridiculous Tumblr blog of someone. The premise of the Tumblr blog is, hey, 3D artists, you get 30 minutes to try and recreate a frame of a, like, very expensive 3D movie. And they're like, hilariously kind of bad when they show a scene from anything from Pixar. And then what you can do, you can only do so much in, like, Maya, you know, in 30 minutes.
Oh, my God, the Lorax.
Yeah. So I was going through the archives for hours. Like, they're just so funny. Like, you can't render hair in 30 minutes, so they look terrible. Yeah, the Edith
one. I skipped
one over
this because I didn't really understand what it was doing, but oh my God. Shit. Look at the Lorax. You're going to laugh your ass off. Look at his little arms.
I love the hair on the Incredibles.
Oh, I'm fucking dying. Oh, shit.
Yeah, it's so, like, purposely bad, you know.
He's got human eyes.
It's from the world of, like, you know, let's try and, like, sing a song badly, kind of. It's so good. Oh, it's so dumb. It's just like funny pictures on Tumblr, but so good.
It's like doofy Sonic, but just so much more so.
Yeah. Oh, God, I love it.
Oh, man.
Why.
That's, yeah. Wow. I totally missed that. I thought this was kind of great in just sort of everybody sharing their sense of terribleness. A trailer for a sequel, like just a direct-to-DVD sequel to A Christmas Story, which is the one with Ralphie and the BB gun and
shoot
dry
out.
Yeah. So yeah, it's just a crappy sequel that, you know, it's cashing in on, you know, an established and overexposed sort of Christmas movie brand, but it's terrible. The trailer is terrible in a very sort of precisely, wow, you're actually making a bad movie because you're trying to cash in on this other movie. And so the trailer is like a shot for shot set of references to the original movie, but with different actors and not as funny. And it's all very weird, but there was the collective moaning and reaction I found entertaining. And there's a lot of fun riffing on fake sequels and stuff. And so it was a fun thread about a terrible, terrible thing. That's all. That's really all.
Here's one of the pandering ones.
Is it really bad? I never watched it. Is it
the original awful?
Movie?
No, the original.
No, this trailer. No,
it's just soul sucking. You should watch it sometime when you got a couple minutes and want to have less soul afterwards. It's like it's so transparently a cash in, and it's so transparently trying to sort of run cargo coat style with pieces of the original movie.
Did they get anyone from the original at all?
I don't think so. No.
Oh, man.
So, yeah.
Man.
Anyway.
So this was one of many very good posts by the Man of Twists and Turns, who I don't know if you guys even sort of pay that much attention to him, but he is killing it. with, like, he's made 10, 15, 20 fairly good posts this month. And this one, of course, is just one that I like because it's about this big library that's built in an old Walmart and got people showing up with the same old, like, rawr, library, rawr, Walmart, rawr, whatever. I enjoyed the post, and I just wanted to sort of mention it because The Man of Twists and Turns does these fairly understated, fairly terrific.
I saw one of these photos because it's the most beautiful, like, interior ever. I saw one of these photos, like, 6 months ago. It was cool to see, like, a sort of roundup of, like, here's 10 links about it, and here's how it went off, and here's how people actually use it. It was great.
Huh, yeah, this is neat.
I mean, that's basically the question, I think, for architects in America today is, what are you going to do with all these vacant, gigantic, big box stores? Like, I don't know about your town, but, like, there are things the size of supermarkets, you know, they're empty all over the place, and, like, somehow those have to be turned into public spaces or living spaces or somehow.
Well, that's the thing. Places that are giant corporations can wind up using that against their bottom line, like, tax credit-wise, whereas, you know, the little town would probably rather take some sort of a temporary loss and then use it for something that benefits the community. Just one of the many ways in which global capitalism does nobody any favors. But yeah, exactly. Having these empty spaces, you'd want to do almost anything with them. And being able to repurpose stuff into something useful like a library, kind of neat.
And there's something like broken windowsy about it. Like, if something's going to fail in your town, you don't want it to be the largest building on the entire street. Like, it's such a big, ugly thing.
And, well, a lot of places, like when I was going to college, we had a place called the Dead Mall, which was one of those malls where, like, the anchor store was left and was empty. And so they had kind of a flea market in it on the weekends, which was fun. But the whole place just kind of never got going because, you know, the largest space was empty. And so the parking lot got empty and there was a nice mall nearby. I think they have since solved this problem. But, you know, the whole time I was in college, it was like, ooh, the Dead Mall. Ooh.
I'm reminded of that, whatever, like the ghost malls in China. There was a post about that a few years ago. Just like big, big, big mall things that got built out to be big consumer centers and then, like, just demographically ended up not working at all. And so they were just like, there were a few shopkeepers keeping up failing stores in these giant, quiet places where nobody ever went.
Oh, man.
But I can't remember any of the details. So, yeah.
There's an, you know, what's the chain of sporting goods? Oh, it was G.I. Joe's that was out here, and they changed the name because I think they finally got sued over it. And then,
I think Joe's went out of business, is what happened.
Right. No, but they were called G.I. Joe's for the longest, and everyone, when I first moved here, I was like, come on, that's a little on the nose, you know? And then they changed it to just Joe's, and then they all went out of business. They are the size of Costco's. And so there's like, you know, there's one in every major Oregon town that's just vacant. So there's one near me where they're like, they ripped off the front of it. It's like actually open to the air now. They're completely redoing it into something, and I hope it's cool like this library.
Huh.
That's cool.
I don't have any other big favorites.
I've got one big favorite, which is this post about tool-assisted speedruns that was put together by Ersatz. And it's just it's sort of an exhaustive, well, it's not exhaustive because there's so much stuff on the tool-assisted speedrun site, but it's a very, very solid roundup of a bunch of different types of tool-assisted speedruns. And a tool-assisted speedrun, for those who do not know, is a specific approach to the more general concept of a speedrun, which is the idea of trying to, in the simplest form, beat a video game as fast as you can. Find the fastest possible way to, you know, beat Pac-Man or beat Quake or beat any game you can think of. Super Mario Brothers is a popular one to go at. And the traditional purist notion of a speedrun is to sit down and play it. Like, you know, play it just by, you know, being that good at it. Maybe using an emulator to load save states to retry something hard. But then tool-assisted speedruns take the idea that, well, you know, there's things that could potentially be done in a video game if you actually had the Twitch skills to be that precise, to be precise down to a 30th of a second. And so let's use tools to surface that. Let's show what would be possible if only you had the fingers and the discipline to do it. And so people use a variety of techniques to eke out like tiny, tiny improvements. And like someone will beat Super Mario Brothers in like, you know, 4 minutes and 37 seconds. And then someone else will come back and beat it in 4 minutes and 36.95 seconds. And everybody will be like, fucking A! It's like NASA landing something on Mars. You know, it's like, it's exciting at that level of precision. So it's this crazy long running culture of people doing nutty stuff, everything from trying to beat games fast to get every item into a game to just breaking games by finding programming glitches that they can take advantage of. And it's just a great post to click through. TASvideos.org is the site that it's all linking to, and it's a just great huge collection of user contributed videos and a lot of nerdy discussion about the insides of video games, how they're programmed, where the bugs are, etc. on the comments on the video. So I had a great time with it. And
super
yeah.
nice.
It's a way to lose an afternoon. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
And someone in the thread mentioned late in the thread a Family Feud version. Someone did a speed run of the Super Nintendo Family Feud game that uses a word recognition algorithm that's really, really sloppy so that you could in theory spell something wrong and still get it correct. And so they use it to put in completely nonsensical stuff that has nothing to do with anything, but the word recognition system is so simple that it accepts them as correct, and it's kind of amazing. And it killed me the other day when I watched it. So that was awesome. That was my favorite post of the month. Go or suck.
That was amazing. That was an amazing crazy post. The most popular post by far is the 20th anniversary of the Princess Bride post.
Oh, good gracious. People went nuts.
Yeah, I mean, who doesn't love... This is like the Christmas story that hasn't been, you know, ruined by a rights holder. Everything's awesome, you know, about it. And we have this epic story. Where is it? Yada, 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 yada,
oh,
yada,
yada. Oh, we put on the sidebar.
Yeah, best of. Yeah.
Our best of.
Admiral Haddock's crazy story of getting to go to the premiere and meet Andre the Giant
and
accidentally.
And when he was on a date with, like, some cute girl
date.
That he was trying to impress.
Yeah. So awesome.
And this is sorry for the segue, but Art W. also has made 750 posts as of this month. So,
yes.
Way to go. Thanks, go. Art W.
Go, you crazy, prolific bastard.
I was going to get to that when we started talking about MetaTalk, along with Filthy Light Thief, and Filthy Light Thief, who has made 500 posts this month. But I just thought I'd mention
this
now.
As of this month.
Oh, sometimes the caffeine adjustment in here goes a little. So, yeah, 500 posts as of this month. So, way to go, you too.
Awesome. I'm done, I guess, then.
I just did something to my chair, and now it won't bend back. Oh, there we go.
Got any other?
Just lean the thing. I had one other Metafilter post. That
I just set up one of these chairs. It's the thing in the back on the left side.
Yeah,
totally
I just found it. Thank you. Thank
it's
you.
The minor click, and it totally changes things.
Thank you.
Any last Metafilter posts?
Josh had one.
I had one further, just a real quick one, but it's a post about someone who did the work to prove that using pretty much just the mechanics of the game itself, you could implement a Turing machine with
explain, please.
Magic the Gathering.
Magic
a Turing
the
machine
Gathering.
Is a fundamental concept of modern computation named for Alan Turing, who theorized
Shut
the thing.
Shut up, I know who Alan Turing
okay.
is.
For other people, I'm running with the whole thing. I'm just doing a spiel, okay? I'm trying to elevator pitch this shit. Jeez.
What is the definition of a Turing machine? It's like smart as a human.
No. It's a totally
is
different.
Is this P equals NP?
Same. No. Not really. So a Turing machine is just a very, very basic conceptual model of computer. It can write and read data along a conceptually infinite paper ticker, which represents the actual memory in a computer. So computers as they exist in practice are essentially very complicated implementations of this idea, which has important implications because it means anything that can be shown to be Turing complete is then functionally, in theory, equivalent to anything else it has. So if you can show that Magic the Gathering is Turing complete, you could then, using whatever mechanism that is, actually do any sort of arbitrary computation using Magic the Gathering cards, which is silly. And it's one of those things that came up in the thread. It's like, yeah, but who cares? And it's not like it's important, but it's neat to take a system that doesn't seem like it has anything to do with another system and prove that they've got this underlying similarity, this isomorphism, where you can say, well, we wouldn't expect them to be the same thing, but in a way they are. So it's just it's a neat stunt using this card game that was not designed with the intent of, computation. It turns out, hey, you can kind of pull it off in a surprisingly self-directed way. So it's just neat.
Yay. Stunt programming.
Yep. Basically stunt programming, but then extended out to collectible trading card games. So, yeah.
I'm still a little mystified, but I get it, generally speaking. And it seems neat. I'll have to go read it.
Yeah. It's a little bit dense, too, so... But for people who are into that, for the three people who are now excited, boy, are you excited.
Yeah. All right.
Ask me.
Yep. Ask Metafilter.
There was tons of things I loved from Ask Metafilter. Continuing with my adoration of Mikeski Park. I always say Miski Park. I don't know what his username is. Ochre Draco asked for favorite non-American radio stations, which has been this sort of constant hassle for me ever since Bhangra FM went off the air. I find myself stuck listening to... Whoops, sorry. I find myself stuck listening to, like, the same Soma FM, Space Station Soma drum and bass stuff over and over again, and it's not what I want. Like, I want interesting music from other countries that I won't hear on the local radio, which is, there's pretty much nothing you can hear on the local radio.
Oh, sweet. Yeah.
And so Mikeski Park had a good list, and a whole bunch of other people chipped in different stuff they like to listen to, and that was terrific. So made me very happy. It's just a great list generating thread with some interesting stuff to check out.
I should throw those all into just a bookmarks file and boom.
It's like in a bookmarks file currently. You should just bookmark that URL.
Well, I did. I favorited it as a bookmark.
You bookmarked it as a favorite?
I fave marked it as a book.
I book faved it as a mark.
I'm gonna pin it to my face page so I don't forget.
I friend-faced it.
The 1 week I was in Belgium, I fucking adored the goddamn radio. Oh my god. I was
totally,
near the French border. What?
Yeah, I mean, yes.
Everything's good. Like, you just fly up and down the dial, and there's hardly any ads, and it's just good French music, good whatever, European music. Some of it's American. It's awesome. Super good.
Whenever I'm down on the South Shore of Massachusetts, they have Portuguese radio stations there that are super good, too. And if I go far enough north in Vermont, they get French, both of which are really fun because I can only sort of understand what they're saying, but I can kind of understand what they're saying, which is extra fun. And the music's just really good.
So wait, the upper, is that Quebecois radio or something?
Yes.
And then the other
one's
like...
You don't have to get very far north to where you can get French on the radio. And if you go south by a couple hours, you can get Portuguese radio stations.
And that's because, like, Portuguese fishermen or something?
Yeah, whaling. There was a whole bunch of, like, whaling and fishing Portuguese people who settled in the south coast of Massachusetts and then continued on to work at the mills down there. So there's a huge, giant Portuguese population in Rhode Island and southern Massachusetts. Which means a lot of amazing restaurants and a lot of amazing radio. It is great.
And good soup.
Soup?
Yeah. I don't know. Everything Portuguese cuisine is soup-based.
And supermarkets. Amazing supermarkets with all sorts of crazy meat that you've never heard of before. And octopus.
Ask me five best of.
You don't even have a list, do you? So I'm going to go for my next one, which is another list generating one, which is more videos like Gangnam Style. Everybody's a little sick of Gangnam Style, the video, but A. Gregoli was like, hey, I enjoyed this video. Find me other videos that are like this video. So again, it's a non-US list generating what pop. Fun videos are there from other countries.
I don't understand what they like about it because the whole thing seems silly to me, like a little LAMFO whatever video, which is just like, hey, there's some bunch of people being silly.
I think that's it though, and pop music, you know,
and a certain amount of like dedication to the level of sort of energy and silliness about it. I mean, because you could make a silly video, but then Gangnam Style, I feel like, is a good example of one that really kind of steps up to game in terms of being sort of aggressively sort of silly and surprising throughout.
Oh, yeah.
It's got a local message for people who are sort of into Korean subculture, but then it's fun even if you have no idea what he's talking about. So it's got this universal appeal.
Yeah, it made me think of Tunak Tunak Tun, which was mentioned, which is like a portly man who has so much fucking confidence and swag.
Dollar
that's
Mendy,
ridiculous.
Man. Dollar Mendy's the fucking, he's the shit.
I have never.
You've never seen it?
Oh, we will.
I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah.
Your life is complete now. You just have to watch this entire video.
I just saw
video.
One of them, which was a bunch of like Indian people dancing on top of a train. That was all done in, like, this crazy one-take crazy.
Well, this one came out in, like, 2003 or something. And
oh,
has,
earlier than that. This is old-school internet meme stuff. I remember going around when I was in college
Yeah,
still.
Like, around 2000. But it has the production value of, like, it's trying to be a Madonna video with explosions
and
crazy
dance. Yeah, but it's got the production
value
of, like, a karaoke video.
Yeah,
and,
but
it's pretty
the
great.
The dude sells it. It's a dude
but this guy
sells.
Is, like, totally stoked. And the music is banging. It's great.
Yeah. It's one of my favorite crazy songs, but
nice. Yeah, somebody suggested Window Licker, which is one of the grossest, most awful, totally bad answer. I mean, it was one of those I was like,
I don't know. Do I delete it
for being a bad answer? Well, it's all like, you motherfucker, bad. Like the first like 30 seconds are just awful swearing.
I mean, no music at all. I think
it
would be something to sort of like, you know, attach an explanation to, but at the same time, in another sense, I feel like it's sort of in the same spirit. It's just a much sort of darker sort of approach than like Gangnam Style, but I don't know. I think it's a fair sort of like, you know.
Really, you think it's a fair cop to call it dance pop crazy dance video?
Kind of, yeah. I mean, it's you know, we're getting into sort of genre schism stuff here because I feel like.
It's worth understanding. I just appreciated that Edgar Gargoyle was like, dude, that is so not what I'm looking for.
I think it's a totally valid response as far as that goes, too. Because, yeah, I think for some people that might be what they're looking for, even with essentially the same sort of setup. I can see it being like depending on the person in the universe that they're in.
Man. If you look at the most favorited posts on Ask Metafilter for the last 30 days, like, this is so, like, people talking about the Redditification of the internet. Every single, this is the top 20 questions, there, like, 18 of them are like, give me a list of the best blanks in it for reason.
It's referenceability, man. That's the stuff that people think they're going to reference, and so they favorite it because they want to come back to it. You know, they're not the best questions. They're just the most accessibly, you know, approachable reference, you know, material.
I think every single one of these is list me three things you love about blank or your favorite X's.
Well, you know, I mean, hey, I'm having trouble working out this tough social situation with my mother-in-law is never, no one's going to be like, oh man, that's the best thing. I'm going to go favorite. You know, it's like three people who've dealt with that specific family dynamic thing, you know, will favorite very meaningfully. But, you know, hey, what's your favorite list of X is going to get a lot of more casual, like, oh, hey, yeah, no, I like X too. I should look at the list.
Here's a strange one that I thought was great. Just list me the worst people. The musicians working in the music industry.
Loved it.
And
loved this post.
So many great, just horrible stories of just people just being awful to each other.
Well, and some of it's just like, oh, I heard this guy's a jerk. But a lot of them are like, you know, here's how Prince calls people to work in his thing or whatever. Paul Simon is considered a scumbag.
Paul Simon is a scumbag. Los Lobos hate their guts.
There's a lot of, like, bad blood.
I did not
there
know any of that.
Graceland,
that was...
especially. But, But, yeah,
it's
what do you do?
It's so crazy. Danzig.
We know that, though. But, yeah, I enjoyed that. I also, another one of these, like, help me understand the history issue. It seems like kind of a weird question. Tell me about the history of identity. But, like, it's actually kind of complicated. Like, you know, now we've got, like, driver's licenses and this, that, and the other. But how would you prove who you were before you could have a photo ID and, you know, the post office or whatever? How did you figure out who people were if they didn't have ID papers in the Middle Ages or whatnot? And there are a bunch of people sort of explaining how that worked, how you could be
gold
identified.
Gold coin bribe?
other people would have to vouch for you. And people would make guesses based on your accent or how you were dressed or whatever. There's a good book called The Social History of Truth with, like, letters of introduction, stuff like that. It was just one of those things I never thought about, and the thread was interesting, and a lot of people knew interesting stuff about the idea.
Yeah. When was state issue ID, like, even a thing? Is it maybe 100 years old? Maybe, like, have we had Social Security numbers since the starting of the country?
No. Social Security numbers are,
like 1930 or something?
I thought it was FDR.
Yeah, somewhere in FDR, I believe.
That's my guess.
Let's see. La, 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 la. Social Security Act. 1935, New Deal. Yeah.
Wow. So then, like, wow, there's no such thing as a driver's license until, Jesus, wow. Huh. So this is, like, happened in the 1900s. So everything before
Well, the Social Security number stuff, in the U.S., anyhow. I mean, you also had, like, all sorts of crazy papers in various ways sort of before and after that. But when you couldn't have a picture, how did you prove that the papers that you had belonged to you?
Oh, God, yeah. I guess you walk around with your barrister. Like, yep, he really did sign those things. And it's actually, like, a homeless person you've paid to walk around with you, maybe, to fake vouch for you. Jeez, it's weird.
It's crazy. It's tricky. Well, that was the thing. The vouching had to go all the way up or all the way down, you know? That person would have to then be vouched for. And so ultimately you have to, like, trace your vouching back to somebody who's super trustworthy, and it, that person's only as trustworthy as you could bribe them to vouch for you. And very interesting.
Wow.
Whole thing's really
interesting. How do you even, like, own land? Oh, man, nothing is...
You, like,
the
signed
whole
for
crazy.
Stuff, but then, yeah, if you had the paper, you would have a claim, you know?
Yeah, I guess.
I mean,
yeah.
I just watched this ridiculous movie, Wanderlust. Has anybody seen that?
No.
It's like Jennifer Aniston and what's-his-name, Paul Rudd, moved to a commune in Georgia, whatever. The movie's kind of ridiculous, but part of it hinges around having the deed to the house. And if you have the deed, it's like being the person who owns it, even if it's not your name on the fucking deed, you know? Like, you know how people always tell you that? Like, put this title in a safe place. And it's like, what if it catches on fire? Do I not own my house anymore?
Yeah.
Which, you know, we're getting away from sort of within our lifetime. But when we were kids, that was absolutely the way people dealt with stuff like that. More than now.
Yeah. That's neat. Yeah, no, I didn't see that at all. I had one ask me that I like. It's just sort of a cute thing. Angela pointed this out the other day, but I need help with sourcing unusual building materials for my DIY doghouse that looks like my ridiculous-looking house. This is from Halogen. Well, click through.
Oh, my God. That's fucking awesome.
And they've made a bunch of progress already. They're just trying to, you know, find, you know, the rest of the stuff to finish it off, like the specific sort of metal grating look on the bottom of the second floor of the house.
So Halogen has a very modern looking house.
Dude, that's
and wants
badass house.
Yeah.
Wow.
So yeah, it's kind of an amazing looking doghouse, and it's an awesome thematic thing they're doing.
This
so.
Is like a maker fair in a single post that, like, going to that length to make an exact replica as a doghouse is insane. Oh, my God.
Well, and I can't wait to see what it looks like, because it'll just be super cool.
Yep.
Well, it's already looking like 90% done, but yeah.
Right.
Oh, my God. That is so cool. That's, wow. Huh. That looks like that house looks like Venice Beach. It reminds me when I lived in L.A. Like, you just go down the street and all of a sudden, wow, that's an amazing house just in the middle of houses. Crazy modern, over the top, awesome.
Great.
Sweet. Everything else I liked was just all freaking lists.
Well, there was...
I like this one. I love Jiro Dreams of Sushi, you know. Are there other documentaries like this? And I've seen zillions of these, and yeah, there's lots of them.
That are, like, mesmerizing art direction? Was that what they were looking for?
I think it was more, like, just about one, you know, super... into their craft, spent their whole life working on, you know, etc. So, like, Rivers and Tides is good.
Have you guys seen Banksy's Exit Through the Gift Shop that Shikana 63 mentioned?
Except
it's a good
that
movie.
Whole thing feels like a put on by the end.
Yeah, it is a little bit, has that self-congratulatory tone to it. But I did enjoy learning that much about Banksy, which I hadn't known.
Well, I thought the first two-thirds were good, and then you're like, you have to, the whole thing seems like fiction at the end, because that's Banksy's thing, not to be a dent. They're like, is the guy even a guy? Like, the whole thing felt like fiction by the end. Like, the whole thing was a Banksy put on. Maybe, did you get that from it? Like, that
the whole thing seemed like a giant goof, maybe?
Yeah, the entire thing was a goof. Like, he paid some random guy to act like an artist to try and win over the art world, to make fun of the art world. And then he made a movie, and then he doesn't tell you until, you know, 3/4 of the way into it
that the guy is a con.
Yeah, and I was just like, oh, fucking Banksy, just turning in on himself.
Right, because otherwise you're like, how did this guy get access to...
I know, so lucky he was in the right place at the right time, and then no. Probably bullshit.
Hoax, speculation. Yeah, I didn't twig into that, but now, of course, that you say it, I'm like, oh.
I just hated it, like, by the last 5 minutes. I was like, oh, you just pulled down my pants and laughed at me for, you know, 90 minutes while I thought this is a great movie. Like, this is, yeah.
Well, I look forward to seeing it.
Oh, God. Well, now we just told you there's a massive twist.
No, actually, yeah, it's in my Insta queue. We'll get around to it at some point, but.
It was great. No, I watched it on a plane, and I was mesmerized, and then I was just felt ripped off by the end, but it was good. I guess there's
Speaking
two other super
amateurs.
Popular.
Oh,
nicely done.
Yes. Yeah, do the amateurs. That was
this
one
was just
mention.
one of the site favorites, which was Blaisdell, I think, was like, how do you spot an amateur in your trade, profession, or hobby? And it's another one of those great, like, lots and lots of people talk about how you can tell if the person who's doing the thing is new at doing the thing. And there's a lot of people talking about pipettes, which I don't know enough to know how you're supposed to do it. But I sort of skipped the pipette stuff, and the rest of it was super interesting. Lots of great, interesting
chemistry?
Things to read about different people's professions, which I would never have known anything about.
Was it a chemist talking about improper pipette technique?
Yeah, a bunch of chemists talking about, oh, you can tell somebody because they do it one-handed or they don't do it one-handed or they use the thing or they put it in the... And I only sort of understand what you use pipettes for in science. And so the whole thing was
stuff.
A little strange.
I was cracking up that Restless Nomad Jeremy posted, like, what a bad community moderator looks like.
Did I somehow miss that?
The idea of this wraps into this, like, personal hypothesis.
That they don't say they're sorry, and...
Yeah. They never admit mistakes. They, like, put up the walls. This like, wraps into this hypothesis I've had for about the last 20 years, and I have a hard time describing it, that I think of experience being circular, that, like, if you look at an absolute beginner and an absolute world champion doing something... that they look almost the same because they both are, like, failing a lot. And that's why, you know, someone's a champion is, like, they already know it, 99% of it. They're just trying that last 1%, and they might be stumbling around, and they would look a lot like a beginner. I just noticed this in, like, skateboarding.
Yeah, if you see, like, a really solid skateboarder trying to work a new trick, they're going to fuck it up a bunch because they're trying to work a new trick.
Yeah.
But
they're going to look like the idiot kids who are 11 who just can't kickflip. Yep. They do it for 8 hours. Like, but they're going to, and then, like, someone who's, like, moderately good at something never wants to crash anymore. So they'll just, like, nail everything and you'll think they're pretty good, but they're not really.
I feel that way about, like, music stuff a lot. I feel like that's kind of a bad habit on my part is I can pick up something musical fairly quickly and I can get to a place where I enjoy playing it. And that's, you know, in a sense, it's good enough, but at the same time, it's easy for me to sort of do the thing that feels comfortable instead of, like, beating my head against something that I kind of suck at. So
yeah,
it's a tricky thing.
Yeah.
Finding that tension between sort of satisfaction with your own competence and actively pushing the limits to grow.
Yep. So, yeah. What was the other huge... Oh, the time traveler. That was yet another, like...
What?
What do you, the time traveler advice, 30-year-old. It's just, what would you tell yourself at 30?
What would you tell your 22-and-a-half-year-old self? I mean, no offense to the people who posted the questions, but we had the 25 and the 30-year-old kind of bang-bang.
Yeah.
And I'm.
But we've had.
And I'm now old enough that I'm like 25 and 30 are the same. You're the same age.
Exactly.
You're young, like, and you don't know what the fuck you're doing.
It's like your 4-year-old self and your 6-year-old self. You still know nothing. Don't worry about it. Try not to get killed.
I just loved Corey's. You don't know it now, but your gums are your most precious resource. So good.
Absolutely.
That's about all I had for Ask.
The only one that I had, which I liked only because it's right up my alley, is documentaries about ordinary people, their secrets and lives. So if you're just looking for interesting documentaries about ordinary people that talk about their personal lives, and here's a whole list of them.
Neat. God,
including
I've seen
Marwin
so many
Call
of these.
And Following Sean and Brothers Keeper is the one I really liked, American Family, et cetera, et cetera. It's just a really nice short list of
I want to see that American Family series, like the original. Oh, Surfwise. Someone finally mentioned that. I never watched that, but I saw that.
Is that about surfing?
Like a burn. It's like a burned out surfer guy who has this huge family of like 6 kids, and he just throws them in a camper and he basically surfs every day. And it's like they don't go to school. They're like it's this weird, like crazy dad and hippie commune kind of family. And,
modern
like,
day or and these, from back in the day?
Like in the late 60s. So these kids are all grown up and they sort of catch up with them now. Like what was their life like in the 60s and 70s, and what is it like now? And the guy was like a famous old pioneer of surfing, but like his kids are kind of, I think when I saw the trailer it was like they weren't super happy with how that turned out, but oh yeah, it was 11 people living in a camper.
Wow.
Like
yeah
just a zillion children.
That's like
yeah,
9
just,
too many.
Yeah, and like no home, they just lived out of like an RV and they just went from surf spot to surf spot like for their entire childhood. It's so crazy and weird.
That's pretty bizarre.
I'm gonna go watch that now.
Sweet.
I watched a lot of like terrible action films recently, so now I need to watch something that's a little bit more calm.
cleanse your palate, refocus your chi.
Totally.
My chi's always getting fucked up, man. That stuff, I swear. I should have bought, you know, just a nice chi. Conservative chi, you know, something with good mileage. But no, I had to go and get a Ferrari chi and
chi upgrade pack.
Yeah, seriously, spend so much time
have
in the shop. People are like, you want to come out of the
helper?
No, my chi, it's, you know, it's...
You know how it is.
It's all out of fucking whack.
Fucked up.
Fucking cheese, man.
Anything else? Is that it? Are we done?
I just wanted to mention a couple things from MetaTalk. In addition to Filthy Light Thief and Art W hitting some milestone posts, we also had this adorable, how come everybody is talking about shoes right now?
That fucking thread.
Thread, which was just so weird. Huh. Like, basically, the question was, why are there all these posts about... shoes.
And
here
then everybody
like
just starts talking about shoes.
Well, and there is kind
fall?
Of a reason, right? Because it is when people move from their outdoor shoes and their summer shoes to their autumn shoes and back to school and back to work, if you're one of those people that has seasonal jobs and whatever. But then it just turned into this chatty blah blah thread about shoes in a way that was actually mostly nice. And I kind of enjoyed it.
Oh,
it's
fun
kind of
it's
when
just,
people get to all talk about things together.
It turns out it's like the antithesis of a chatty MetaTalk thread that I'm going to care about. And I tend to read like pretty much all MetaTalk threads. I'll at least skim through them. But I have no shoe chi at all.
How many pairs of shoes do you have?
I own probably 6 pair.
Okay.
At least 3 of which are like shoes that I never wear because they're like dress shoes, and one of which I should throw out. And a pair of sneakers and a pair of, like, you know, slip-on loafers. And that's, like, it. Because I need them to protect my feet from pointy things outside. That's
right,
pretty
when
much
you leave
they
the
do.
House, which
yeah.
is not that often.
Yeah, so it's... Yeah.
Yeah, I have lots of seasonal shoes. And then a lot of shoes I'll probably never wear again that I should probably get rid of.
I thought...
So we all know how many shoes Matt has because we see photographs of him every time he buys them.
There's this little thing, this little artisanal mom and pop shop from the brothers Zappos that I go to, and yeah, they have about 100,000 options. Now, I think shoes are one of those things where size difference isn't as big of a deal. There's not a body type issue. Like, anyone can go buy new shoes. It's pretty easy. The numbers are all about right. And, like,
well, all women know, though, that the smaller your feet are, the cuter the shoes are that you can buy. If you go to a place that has, like, lots of shoes and, you know, that has, like, racks of them, like, the smaller your foot size, the cuter the shoes get. I have, like, medium-sized shoes, so this isn't, like, an axe grind that I have, but, man.
I have massive feet, so it's cool, because I always have the sail rack all to myself of all the crazy 13s.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, the Casey Nicole post.
Yeah, I figured MetaTalk stuff, that was kind of nice. Just came back around Casey Nicole and MetaFilter's role, and it came up recently on some site, and... And
I got to finally reveal, like, what I worked on last year for a couple weeks.
I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah, I basically had to pay all those skeevy, gross, look-up people's criminal record sites, basically.
Because I only had, like, this woman who...
I had basically, what, three names? Well, two names. Well, three names. Like, the what's... So we had Julie something, and she has a new last name. And it was hard to even find her old last name. Then we have the neighbor, Debbie Swenson or whatever.
I thought Debbie was the person who put it all together.
Yeah, and then she had a daughter. And so I looked all these people up, and they're all in Kansas. And so they haven't, like, gone to the big city much. They all probably live within 150 miles of each other still. And it's like, I figured out who the daughter was. I figured out what happened to Debbie, where they ended up moving to. And I figured out what happened to the Casey Nicole subject woman, Julie, and who she married.
She was the
and
one with, like, the pictures were of.
Yeah, and this took, like, this was, oh, I mean, this scared me about the whole, when hackers dox each other and they look up all these crazy government public database stuff. Like, I figured out Julie's new husband's job and his cell phone number from doing this deep digging. And it's like, and then I was too chicken shit to call anybody or actually confront this. And I actually borrowed the services of Rogers Cadenhead, who used to be a reporter. And I was just like, how would you approach this? Like, here's my mountain of evidence. There were a couple leaps of logic where I had to figure out, you know, but then I figured, oh, they're still in Kansas. You know, he's at this car dealership. He's actually listed as a salesman, you know, the husband guy. And so eventually Rogers, like, called the husband of the Casey Nicole girl on his cell phone one day and just said, hey, I'm a reporter. I'm doing a story about this. 10 years later, was she interested in talking? And the guy was like, what? No, don't call back.
And he didn't.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, man. It took, like, weeks of research. I wanted on the 10-year anniversary to basically have an interview with her. I wanted her to be, like, in a better place, a much better place.
Right.
And to be able to say, like, okay, that was 10 years ago. I don't love talking about this, but that was fucked up. And here's how it was fucked up, and here's what I'm up to now.
But you never know where I've moved on. I can understand being just like, you know what, I would like to not discuss this at all ever again. Thanks. I can see that thing outcome,
I mean,
too.
You had... Yeah, if you had a crazy neighbor who invented this entire thing around you, like, I would never want to do anything to raise her hackles.
Well, that was the thing, you know, talking about it on the record anywhere publicly. Like, every now and again, I can kind of, like, I put up a bunch of photos of, like, stuff from old photo albums, one of which was, like, my prom photo. And I was like, oh, you know, I wonder what happened to my prom date, who was, like, a friend of mine, you know, not even, like, some guy I used to date. And, you know, I went looking around a little bit. And after a while, I was like, if I can't find this guy after 15 minutes of poking, like, there's a really good chance he's not someone who wants to be found. Because, like, he's, you know, smart enough that he could have a public Facebook or a website or something and doesn't. And so maybe that in and of itself is kind of an indicator that he's a little bit on the down low for whatever reason.
Huh. Yeah. So, yeah, it was a and I saw in the thread, someone's like, why would she ever want to talk ever?
I think just different, like, it's one of those things where different people imagine they'd have very different feelings about that stuff. Because, yeah, I think if it was me, I would probably talk about it because I'd be like, what the fuck? But then again, I didn't deal with it. So there's definitely people who are crazy who I have dealt with who I'd rather not, you know, just talk about it because, like, fuck that. I don't even want to think about it, you know, so I can see both sides of it.
Yeah, I totally can, too.
One other thing I wanted to plug for Meta Talk, just as a yay, oh, happy, cool, yeah, continuing community working on stuff thing, is podcast transcription. Pronoic's been organizing a bunch of that and got a bunch more done with a bunch of volunteers' help over the period of the last month or so.
Yeah, there's a ton of people who are doing these great, like, grinding away at it with the help of some kind of software. Have you used the tool at all, Josh?
Yeah, I did a little bit. It's really not bad. It works pretty well. And it's easy to get into without having to do any work. Yeah, fanscribed. Sort of like a software service that makes it relatively easy to break up a podcast transcription project into a bunch of tiny chunks that anybody can just come along and pick up anytime. So, you know, lose a little bit of the oversight that you might need to worry about in a much broader sort of crowd, but Mephite's transcribing Mephite podcasts is a pretty reliable group, so it works out pretty well.
Yeah, and it just means the podcast is available to people who would prefer to read it rather than listen to us, which I can totally understand.
Yeah, and both preference and just accessibility for people who are hearing impaired in one way or another. So,
right, which includes at least, you know, a number of our members, and hey, why not? So it's cool.
Yep.
Does it chop them into like 30-second bits?
Yeah, somehow? It takes the audio and it chops it into 30-second bits, and then you can just go grab a segment and you transcribe that, and you can just do that one 30-second bit without any other context, and everybody could, in theory, do bits disjointed like that. In practice, I think a lot of people sit down and they'll hammer through a few of them, so they'll do a few minutes at a time or whatever.
5 minutes or something, but it does mean that you can do a manageable amount. And so if you do have a lot of people who will be happy to work on it, you can feel like you can contribute, but only work on a couple minutes of the podcast, but that has value to the overall project.
Yeah. It's kind of the way, you know, the way backtagging worked. We had some serious crazy backtaggers who did a ton, but we also had a lot of people who just threw in and, you know, they did a page or two, you know, or did a page every, you know, once a month or every few months as it occurred to them. And it worked because you had the combination of that, the super aggressively, you know, into it people, but you also got to harness a much broader base of people who are maybe not so into doing a ton of work, but they want to help and they can. So it's a good setup. I wasn't sure what I would think of the whole fanscribe thing when we first saw it come up, but it seems like it's working pretty well for people.
Yeah, it's been great.
I was researching transcripts for a different project, and like, if you don't have a time crunch, like it's like a dollar a minute or something if you want it like today or tomorrow. But if you give like services a week, I think they farm this out to like Mechanical Turk or something, and it's like a penny a minute or something. It's
really?
Super cheap.
Huh.
And, yeah, I was almost like
have
on the verge of like. No, but I've heard a lot of people in the documentary world do this. They basically film, they film or they record like 40 hours for something that's going to be 20 minutes long. And then they just run it through one of these services. And then they just take a piece of paper, they print it out, and they just X out what they want to keep. And then they go back and edit from there. Like paper editing is actually the first step. If you ever heard like NPR people and they work on a 2-minute piece, they'll say it took 40 hours of recording and research. And you're like, how on earth do you, that's crazy. How do you even start attacking 40 hours for 2 good minutes? And it's like, oh, well, you just get it all in text and then you just highlight the best parts and then you cut them out. So yeah, that was something I'm also looking into if, this wasn't as successful as it was, but
neat.
It's pretty damn successful.
Well, you know, we could even try it and do some quality control comparisons with the older podcasts that are still not, we're still moving backwards,
I'm sure the cheap ones
pace.
Are bad.
Yeah, getting back to the archives.
I mean, they can't be great. It's yeah.
But proportionally speaking, people, for the amount of time it took to record all those podcasts, we're going on a crazy clip. I mean,
absolutely.
People could, in theory, blow through like the entire archives by the end of the year if they were feeling really, really transcribey.
Right.
And what do we get in the end? Just the podcast.
For the hearing like impaired, text. Matt, are you not paying attention?
Oh.
It's good news.
Oh, all right. I just thought, like, when people were pushing for it in the beginning, everyone said, like, I don't have time to listen to podcasts. And I'd be like, well, you know, we already write up our best links, so that's kind of good.
You know, it's a mix of things. Different people come to different places. Anyway, it's neat that it's been happening, so.
I like reading them, and I don't have time for one-to-one attention to almost anybody else's podcasts except our own, so.
Yeah. I'm a lot more likely to go back and read ours than I am to listen to them, because it's weird, because I was there, you know? It's like, I remember saying this stuff, so it's like, whereas I can read and sort of skim for the fun bits, so.
There should be a drinking game associated where you have to drink every time you see Jessamine. Ha 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 ha. Yeah, totally. I just remember seeing some phrase over and over again from all of us.
I thought that was awesome.
Like over and over.
Well, we think a lot of things are awesome. It's an awesome site. What can I say, man? You know, it's
yeah.
We're upbeat. Oh, speaking of last link, JPH is working on a Metafilter It Gets Better project. If you are interested in participating in this crowdsourced It Gets Better video, you should talk to him.
Yeah, go check that out. It's looking like a neat idea.
Yeah, how's that faring? Because it seems like a lot. The more I think, it seemed like an awesome idea at first.
No one's asking
like
you to do any work at all on that.
No. I'm just saying, like, oh, yeah, like 20 of us doing 30-second bits. That'd be great. We could have it done by Friday. And then you're like, well, and then
yeah, no, I think it's going to be a lot more concepts. Of an effort to get it all put together. But, hey,
well, did you read the document he's got? He's got, like, what I consider to be totally reasonable timelines. Like, December, they'll do the final edits. He's got deadlines for people. And, you know, the people who want to contribute who can meet deadlines will be the people who contribute. I think, you know. That's sort of the good thing about it. It's not like you've got to get 10 people, specific people, to all do a thing. You can just get individual people, whoever can actually make deadlines and do the work.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah.
Wow.
I think it'll work out well.
Some people are saying it doesn't get better. Wow. So many stories are painful.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, obviously, there's people who have different approaches. A lot of people hate Dan Savage, and it's his project, but... You know, I think the goal, which JPH is trying to keep narrowly focused, is doing sort of an It Gets Better video the way other people have done it. If people want to make their own videos about problems that they've been having, more power to them. You know, we can link to it, share it around the same way.
Yep.
Yeah.
Do we want to do we want to do any sort of time traveling discussion of MetaTalk posts we'll make later this afternoon for when we're recording this? But... yesterday or the day before when we actually posted.
You want to make some predictions about how it went?
Yeah, should we discuss the threads as if they had already happened? Because it's like 11:35 right now, and I think at noon we're going to post about the new mods, and then at 2 we're going to post about the edit feature. But
did
that all happened a couple
days
ago.
Did you contact the new mods to tell them that we're going to post about?
Yes, I did.
Good.
Yeah. So this is like famous last words.
Exactly, yeah. Well, I am so glad... that we picked Lobster Mitten and Good News for the Insane, although it's unfortunate that his head literally exploded after aliens invaded the very next day. That was kind of weird.
It took, let me see, like, I think we had about 80 people apply for the job, and there was like a good 15-20 that were amazing, so it was really hard to narrow it down.
A lot of it was trying to figure complicated scheduling things, people who are overemployed, underemployed, in the wrong time zone.
You lived was such a huge problem. It sucked.
What'd you say?
Yeah, where you just happen to live was probably the biggest determinant.
Yeah, I mean, part of the thing, we got a ton of applications from people in the U.S. And on the one hand, that's great because there were a ton of great people. But on the other hand, one of the things we specifically need from one of the candidates, at least, is some coverage during U.S. sleepy time.
Or U.S. insomniacs or third shifters, which we didn't seem to get any of.
Yeah. And there's insomniacs, and then there's actual dedicated I am up at nighttime. That is the way my life is. Because, I mean, I have trouble sleeping sometimes, too, but you can't apply for a job on that. Yeah. It was nice. It was nice that the problem was too many good candidates. That was a really nice problem to have as far as this goes.
And so we'll be training people up in the next week or two, and hopefully they'll start having little shifts in the middle of the month.
Yep.
Yeah, I think, here's my prediction, famous last words. I think everyone will be pretty stoked. Everything was great. The only thing I can imagine is if someone really wanted it that they got snubbed would be pissed, but I don't think they would lash out on Metatron.
I doubt it, yeah. I mean, you never know, but people are pretty good. I sent out the email this morning to everybody who applied who didn't get it to say thanks for applying, and, we went with someone else, but we'll keep you in mind if things change in the future, And I've gotten a few nice notes back from people saying, "Oh, hey, well, you know, everybody's cheering." Nobody's like, "Really, you son of," you know. So, yeah, I feel like people went in with eyes open and a good attitude. So,
and then was our other wonderful announcement? Oh yeah, we're gonna finally add editing like every other website of the last 10 years.
The edit window will be go, or will have been go.
will have bingo.
Which I think will be mostly positive. Everyone will probably say, but what about? And I think we've tried to come up with every but what about and a workaround for
we're
all that stuff.
We're anticipating a bumpy adjustment period, but we're kind of excited to have people be able to fix their own typos, and we're very excited to not have to fix your typos anymore.
Oh my God. Like, it just ramped up in the last 6 months.
There's
like
20 people who need us to fix typos several times a week, and then, you know, 12,000 who never do, but we just figured we should deputize everybody. I mean, we're the people. I fix my own typos all the time. It seemed rude
too,
to not
constantly.
Let other people do the same.
Wasn't it something like 5 to 10% of everything we've ever posted we've edited? But I mean, we're trying to make sure our language is
something
right.
Like
and
yeah, but yeah, no, yeah, it was somewhere in like low to mid single digits for the percentage of our own comments that we've edited, which I mean, which is not terrible. I was worried it was going to turn out to be like 25 or 30%, like I was editing fucking everything, but turns out not so bad. Maybe I just
that's what it feels like.
But so
and just having the ability to do that, and regardless of whether Preview exists and people should use it or not, realistically we have to sort of play it as it lays, not envision our ideal situation, and people having 5 minutes to make edits seems like something that'll be helpful.
I think it'll be an interesting couple days if we sort of hash out how that works in practice, too, see what sort of things people do that surprise us.
Sure.
Yeah, in the end, I think it's going to be a minor blip that people just it'll be a nice thing and people will be cool with from now on. But, who knows?
Should be interesting.
Should be interesting.
Yep. Well, maybe we should stop podcasting and start posting on MetaTalk.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, all.
Great talking to you guys, as always.
All right.
Adios.
Bye.